statistics from 1999 to most recently February of 2015 demonstrate 971 deadly force incidents in churches or faith-based operations. Now, that statistic may surprise you, but in the course of this conversation with my friend Cody, I'm going to update those statistics through December of 2017, and that number has grown exponentially. This conversation is important, and I pray, friends, that you will listen and that you will take it back to your pastor, your elder, your board, and that you will encourage them to get an active shooter policy in place for where you worship. Stay tuned for my conversation with Cody next on this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. Hi, friends. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. You can listen to us on Global Star Radio Network, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's gsradio.net. We are on Brannon House's Worldview Weekend Radio on demand, so you can listen to us there at any time. We are on Talk America Radio Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. That's talkamericaradio.us. And, of course, you can listen to every episode on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn and all of those podcatcher platforms, as well as SoaringEagleRadio.com. Well, my guest today is my friend Cody. He is a friend, a law enforcement official, and he is a brother in Christ. He attends the fellowship that I am blessed to pastor. And so we've been talking about having this conversation about active shooter policy and how churches can prepare themselves for the potential incident of an active shooter. And so, Cody, welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Well, this has been a long time in the making, and I appreciate you taking the time to chat about this very, very important subject. I read some statistics in the introduction, which spanned 1999 to February 2015, and I mentioned 971 deadly force. Now, of course, as soon as I start mentioning statistics, I almost always give a caveat, and that is this. Make sure that the statistics that you're checking are accurate and from a reputable information source, because I've got in front of me, Cody, some statistics that deal with deadly force incidents or DFIs, as they're known as, at faith-based organizations in the U.S. And this covers the whole span of incidences, and this ran from January 99 through December 31st of 2017. And the number that they list for deadly force incidences was not 971, but 1,705. Now, as soon as I see that number, almost, not quite, but almost double the previous number up through February 2015, my first inclination is to say, what in the world is going on? Now, as a law enforcement offender, let me add this too. Let me add this too, folks. Cody's not only a law enforcement official, but he is also a certified concealed carry weapon trainer. And so that makes him uniquely qualified to speak to this subject. So as we get into this conversation, Cody, let's paint some boundaries. Let's lay out a framework for people to understand, because sometimes they may think, well, I'm not at risk for an active shooter. I don't know any crazies in my life. And how would you respond to somebody that says, well, who's at risk for an active shooter? How would we even know that?
Well, I would respond by saying, if you just look like the stats that you mentioned, you know, those are just deadly instances in the church. That doesn't even include, you know, how many violent occurrences have we had at these churches. I would almost imagine if you'd add that number to it, you would triple that. And if you just look at the history of these active shootings, you know, we had one at a nursing home here in Ohio, with a village of 1,000 people. So they happen everywhere. You know, you look at like the mental health issues that we have in the United States, and how many undiagnosed problems do we have? You know, and you can go all the way back into the, you know, when they shut down the long-term psychiatric care facilities and started medicating everybody. Well, yeah, that's fine as long as those medications work. And the key is that people have to take those medications. So if you get somebody who gets off their medicine for a couple of weeks, they don't have a handle on what they're doing. So if they've got like a bipolar disorder, or even like a multiple personality disorder, you don't know what they're going to do off of those medications. You know, you could get into like the revenge. You know, church starts at the same time, at the same place every Sunday. And everybody knows, anybody who knows me knows that I'm going to be at Calvary Chapel in Lima every day at around 10:15, and I'm going to walk out of there around noon. So if they have a grudge against me personally and they want to get back at me, they know that's the one spot that I'm going to be every single Sunday without a doubt. You know, so you also have to take that in effect. You also have like the politically motivated climate that we're in today, as we just seen with what happened, the tragedy that happened over in Pennsylvania this past weekend. You know, you never know. And the problem is that when you get somebody with a mindset that says, well, this will never happen to me, typically, unfortunately, that's where it ends up happening.
Yeah. Yeah. So what you're saying then, Cody, is that anybody really is at risk for being involved in an active shooter incident. You can't say it can never happen here, because it can happen here.
You're exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that should make people sit up and pay attention immediately then, because there are some folks that still think, and I think the name of the little town was Sutherland Springs, Texas. Was it last year or the year before? I'm sure those folks in that sleepy little town, last thing on their mind was somebody shooting up the church and murdering people. But it happens. And so, folks, we need to pay attention to this information, the details that we're going to provide, and some of the recommendations and advice. I would highly encourage you to take it to heart and discuss with your church leadership about what they should be doing to ensure a safe environment for your normal meetings. And it's really, as soon as I say that, Cody, it seems surreal that in America we would have to be concerned about our places of worship and protecting them, but we really do these days, don't we?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, you know, like you went over with Sutherland Springs, Texas, it doesn't matter where you're at or what church you go to, everybody is a risk.
Yeah. Is there anything that you could tell people as a trained law enforcement official? Is there anything, any pointers that you could tell people to help them identify people who may become an active shooter? where would you even start? I mean, in this day and age, we don't want people, you know, pointing fingers and falsely accusing and being, you know, amped up and you know, there's an active shooter behind every tree kind of thing. And that's not what I'm saying. I guess what I'm asking is, what are some markers as a law enforcement officer that increased the odds of somebody become? Is there anything that you can point out or identify along those lines that would help people identify who may be a candidate for an active shooter?
Yeah, the biggest thing is just getting to know your congregation. I cannot stress that enough. You know, not only as church members, but as pastors out there, that'll help you. If somebody comes to church and, you know, maybe they don't want to publicly announce, hey, I've got a bipolar disorder, I've got a multiple personality disorder that I struggle with, because it's embarrassing. But if you get to know your congregation as a pastor, hopefully they'll come forward and they'll say, yeah, I've struggled with these issues in the past. So that way, if somebody walks in and they're not acting right, you know them well enough that it's like, you know, hey, what's going on with you today, Cody? And how can we get you some help, or what can we do to alleviate that? If you go back to the history, and it's the most frustrating thing for me as a law enforcement officer, is we get a lot of black eyes because you look at things, you know, like the recent Parkland school shooting that happened. There are several signs of this guy is not right, and they just continue to be ignored. And I'm not saying that all law enforcement agencies are like that at all, but, you know, it just seems like when it happens, then you go back and then they come through the guy's social media account, or they go back and they talk to his professors or people who go to his church and people have known this person. And it's like, yeah, I saw the warning signs were there, but I never said anything. And that's frustrating. We can't, as cops, we can't react, or we can't begin to prevent something from happening if we don't know what's going on. You know, like I always give people the example, the city where I work, you know, we've got 10 to 15,000 people in the city, and we have a maximum of 4 cops that patrol the city. And that day when we've got excessive manpower. Well, 4 cops are, I'm not going to be able to know every person in the city to know if they're starting to spiral out of control. We rely a lot on their family members. When they see it, they say it, and then we can go and talk to them. And if we see the markers, or if we see the signs that they're doing, we can get them help. We've got a lot of tools in our toolbox as law enforcement that we can do what's called an EMC, which is where we take them to a hospital, and it essentially forces a mental health provider to give them an evaluation if they're showing like a homicidal tendency, and it's not, you know, if they haven't threatened someone to the point that they can't be incarcerated, but they've said, you know, hey, look, I feel like I could really hurt some people. Well, that way we can go through and we can get them the help that they need. So I can't stress to get to know everybody in your church and to get across that, see something, say something. You know, if you see someone in your church that, you know, you may even have identified someone in your church now that's just like, you know, that guy's just not acting right. Now, of course, as a church, we want to be welcoming to people, and we can't ever push anyone away. But it's just things to keep in mind. You know, I'm not saying that if you have someone in there that's throwing up a couple of red flags to go and to kick them out of your church, because as Christians, that's not what we want to do. But if you see it, say something to him. Maybe talk to, if it's a younger guy, talk to his parent or talk to his wife, or just confront him directly. Just, you know, hey, is there anything we can help you with as a church? Are you going through something that we can help you with? And when you get to know your congregation, you'll be able to identify those kind of markers if someone's just not acting right.
Yes. Yeah, that's good advice. Let me share these statistics with our listeners, Cody. Of those statistics I mentioned earlier, 1,705 total deadly force incidences. Of those, 478 actually resulted in murder. So that's a significant percentage. It's over 25% actually resulted in a death, in a murder. 336 other incidents were robbery. That was the motive, robbery. But 206 of those total deadly force incidences had to do with domestic spillover. That's the category they've got that under, domestic spillover, which means domestic relationship violence that found its way into the church. Like Cody said, a husband or a wife follows the other. They know where they're going to be, when they're going to be there, and they just continue that domestic violence there in the ministry property. 206 incidents of that. In fact, I just read, it's just a day or so ago, Cody. I just read about a man who showed up in the church parking lot. He and his wife had been married for 20 years. They had a couple of small children. She was at the church service, and she came out of the church service with her children, and he was waiting for her at her car, and he murdered her in the parking lot and then shot himself right in front of his children in the church parking lot. And so, again, a reminder, this can happen at any time, at any place.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So mental illness, 142 DFIs, deadly force incidences, 142 attributed to mental illness. Now, we know that's a broad category, though, and you've already touched on this, and so I don't want to elaborate on it too much, but that could be something as identifiable as medications that either are not working or are producing symptoms that result in violence and anger. And I've said this for a long time, Cody, and you've probably seen this out on patrol, but sometimes just your basic medications that people are taking that are prescribed by doctors, they have some very adverse effects on people, and it really puts them into a rage, and they lose control of their emotions. I know you've probably seen that.
Yep, we have. You know, when someone goes to a doctor, and I'm not a mental health provider or anything like that, I just know from experience of talking to people that have went through it. You know, essentially the doctor, they go in, they say, look, I've got this problem. And the doctor, by his experience, just starts throwing drugs at them. You know, let's see what will help you with this. So we're going to try, you know, several different drugs. You know, yes, they could have some adverse effects on you, you know, but and then you come back in a week and you tell me how this drug made you feel. And then they do that until they find the right combination of drugs to give them to get them on, you know, what would be like a level day to day without having, you know, an outrage that they couldn't control or a breakout that they couldn't control. If you're bipolar, they call it a manic episode. You know, so they really don't know what's going to work. They just say, you know, hey, look, this has worked for someone that I know that kind of was in the same situation as you, but every person is different. So let's just give you this medication and see if it works. And if it works, great. You know, we'll continue to give it to you. And if it doesn't, we can either, you know, adjust the dosage up, down, or try a different drug.
Wow. It seems a little bit to me like Russian roulette, just kind of experimenting with people's health.
Yeah, you're right. But I mean,
be that as it may, we have, and you know, because we formulated this, we have at our fellowship an active shooter policy, and I just want to highlight a couple of these things before we move into some other questions, Cody. But by the way, folks, I'm happy to share this active shooter policy with anybody that would like to have it. So all you need to do is email me, PastorMike@CCLOhio.org, PastorMike@CCLOhio.org. If you'd like to receive a copy of our active shooter policy, it might help you in crafting one for your fellowship. But let me just read down through a couple of these bullet points, Cody, and then I've got some additional questions that I think our listeners are probably thinking themselves. But the definition of an active shooter is defined as an individual actively engaged in killing or attempting to kill people in a confined and populated area. In most cases, active shooters use a firearm. There is no pattern or method to their selection of victims. However, increasingly, active shooters target Christians in their meetings. So this was the objective and the definition and the reasoning, the rationale for why we had to have this. Now, also under the definition in our document, we have safe children, safe children. And what we mean by that is the evacuation or shelter in place process for all children's ministry participant. So here's the rationale. Pastors and elders are responsible for the welfare of all attendees. In most cases, this involves their physical and emotional well-being. However, this does not exclude the necessity to protect all attendees from physical harm intended by others. Therefore, in order to preserve life and address the reality of an active shooter event, these guidelines have been established. So what we've done, Cody, as you well know, is we've laid out in the next section the procedures that and we've taken our congregation through these a couple of times already so that people are familiar. And I would recommend to folks listening, if you're considering doing this, get an active shooter policy in place and run it through, you know, whatever channels you need to run it through to get it officially enacted. And then you need to take on a Sunday morning, you need to take about 10 or 15 minutes and run people through it and say, okay, here are the procedures. Here are the things that we're going to do. And one of them is this. So I said all of that, Cody, to get to this point. Part of the procedures after you've dealt with the initial threat is that someone is designated to notify law enforcement officials and to give them information related not just to the situation involving the active shooter, but also related to the safe children, the current status of them and where they are located. And the reason that we have to do that is because law enforcement needs all of the information that we can give them, because when they arrive, they need to know what they're walking into when they enter that church building, don't they?
Right. You're absolutely right with that. And getting on, we're going to start dipping our toe into it here, but the active shooter response team at church, you know, that's the other thing that they need to understand is, you know, I mean, I'm a law enforcement officer myself, and, you know, I work in a smaller city that we go to church up in Lima. Every Lima cop up there, they don't know who I am, you know? Right. So in the way law enforcement's trained now is they're trained to go in the building. The first officer gets there, he runs in and he does whatever he needs to do to stop the threat. He doesn't know, you know, and that's where if you train your congregation or if you just talk to your congregation, look, tell the cops what you've seen the shooter wearing. If it's not over at that point in time, he was wearing a red hat with a gray sweatshirt. So that way, hopefully that's in that law enforcement officer's mind as he's going through the church. So if he happens to see one of your elders or somebody who might have a concealed carry permit, when we get into talking about that, they hopefully don't shoot them. Cause that's the stark reality of it, is that how you end the violence is to stop the guy doing the violence or the girl doing the violence. And that's how we're trained. I go to at least three or four trainings a year. And that's all we're trained on is we drive to where we hear the gunshots coming from, and we shoot who's shooting, who's pulling the trigger in that. So that's something that we also have to keep in mind when we talk about this active shooter response team and this active shooter training that we're going to get into.
Yes. Yeah. Now something else that's very important for folks to understand, especially if you live in a larger city. Now, Lima is not that big, 45,000 maybe, and the police force is sufficient enough that someone can be to our location within, I'd say, 5 or 10 minutes. However, when you're involved in an active shooter situation, 5 or 10 minutes seems like an eternity, doesn't it, Cody?
You're absolutely right. And I compare this when I teach my concealed carry classes. You know, if anyone's ever had to call for a rescue squad for someone, how long does it take? And then, you know, they usually get there within 5 or 10 minutes, like you said. but to the person waiting on them, it seems like it takes them 20 minutes to get there. You know, you can pull the trigger a lot of times in a 5 to 10 minute period. And if you're blessed like we are, and we live in a city like Lima where, you know, and there could be a cop right around the block if you're lucky that gets there in a couple of seconds. But if you have a church out in a rural area or like a village that maybe they don't have a cop on Sunday morning because, you know, they've done their stats for that village and Sunday morning's a time that they don't need a cop because the crime rate is so low and the calls are so low that you could be waiting, you know, 15 to 20 minutes on a deputy sheriff to arrive if you're lucky, because everything with the police departments, just like everything else, is all budget driven. And it's unfortunate. You know, but we can't, there's some small villages in Auglaize County and there's some small villages in Allen County that they can't afford to have someone work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So if they're not working on a Sunday, it's going to fall back on the sheriff's offices back to respond to that active shooter and other agencies around the county, because we would, of course, go to help. But the problem with that is, you know, if Allen County has five deputies working on a Sunday morning and you're waiting for them to come and they're probably going to be around the Lima area and your active shooter happened out in Buckland or it's out in Spencerville somewhere, you could be waiting 20 minutes before law enforcement get there just to end the shooting. Now you can even get into talking about like what the emergency medical response is going to be and how long is it going to be before you can even get at emergency medical services in there.
Yeah, so I think everything that you've said, Cody, really highlights this point, this what I consider to be an absolute essential need for churches of really any size, and that is this, that there needs to be in the local body of believers, there needs to be an active shooter response team. There, and what I mean by that is there needs to be a trained and well-coordinated response team, individuals who are trained in weapons use. And what I mean by trained, I mean they're very familiar with that weapon. They shoot it on a regular basis. And then I'm going to toss this back to you, Cody, to describe what we've already done at our fellowship. And part of that training needs to be that this response team has actually taken the time together as a team to walk through in the church building an active shooter scenario and what each individual is going to do in response to that. So I'll pass it back to you, Cody, and let you elaborate on that.
Right. So our team consists of, I'm not going to give the number out over.
Yeah, I would not.
For obvious reasons.
Right.
But our team consists of some highly trained individuals who include myself. I'm a police officer. I'm also a military veteran. There's a couple other guys in there who've been around firearms their entire lives. I've shot with them for several years, and I know their capabilities of it. Just recently we got together and we went out to the range. I had these guys at 50 feet, 25 feet shooting on 3x5 steel targets, and we were hitting them consistently. Accuracy has to be key in this. I've spoke with a couple of other local churches and they're like, yeah, you know, Randy from down the street has his concealed carry permit and we allow him to bring his gun into church. Well, the problem is Randy hasn't shot his gun since the last time he's taken his concealed carry class, which was 5 years ago. I run into that all the time as a concealed carry instructor. I meet up with these people, you know, hey, when's the last time you went out and shot? Well, I shot with you when I took your class and I can't even remember the guy who I'm talking to know when he took my class was. So these individuals that you select for this team have to be trained. They need to train together and they need to have a plan when they go through the church, you know, and do rehearsals like our team. I actually went up and I played like I was an active shooter and I walked in and it did two things. First off, it gave the guys an opportunity to actually clear the church with their firearms out, which we've never done before. The second thing that it did is it actually helped us identify some weak points in our plan as I walked in and we were able to fix those weak points in our plan to make sure that, you know, no plan is going to be foolproof, but our plan has as little holes as we can because we've actually rehearsed it. Okay, I'm going to be an active shooter. The guys in our team didn't know when I was going to come or what I was going to do, what direction I was going to go. And doing that, we found, hey, if we throw someone in a chair by a door, for an instance, you know, that could stop it a lot faster than what it would be if we're all just sitting in our pews paying attention to you when you give your message.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, and to go on from that, you know, we also getting to know your congregation, like I spoke about a little bit earlier ago, you know, you can identify people that would be good fits on this team. You know, I recommend veterans. They're already trained. You can go out with them and they can help you train because that's what they did if they were active duty. You know, if you've got a law enforcement officer that you know that's in your congregation, you know, get a hold of him and ask them, hey, you know, would you be willing to head this up and to give these guys some training or a firearms instructor, even take them out and go out and train. I know our goal with our team is that we try to get out every other month and go and shoot again, just to make sure that we're up to par. Now we shoot more than that, but that's just with us as a team. We want to shoot as a team every other month to make sure everybody's still on the same page of what we would do. And we go through and then you review it, you know, hey, look, has anyone thought about stuff the last month that we can do to the church to make the church a harder target and not a soft target? You also got to take your medical personnel too. If you've got nurses or if you've got prior service combat medics in your congregation or a doctor, and get them encompassed in that team too. I know that I built a trauma kit that we keep in our church that the only purpose of that kit is to treat gunshot wounds. I just read a stat the other day that the CDC put out, and this is not an exact, cause I didn't go in depth in the article, but it said something like 94% of the deaths in these active shooter scenarios are because people bled out from an uncontrollable bleed. But then you go back and you study and it's like, well, that could have been prevented had someone put a tourniquet on the leg or had somebody been able to put a pressure on that wound and get them to the hospital as soon as they can. So, you know, your plan needs to be a well-rounded plan. You got to have what you're going to do the second that shooter walks into the building. You need to know, okay, after that threat is eliminated, now what are we going to do afterwards? If you've got 2 or 3 injured people, the emergency medical services cannot go into that building until law enforcement has deemed it safe and that there's no longer a threat in that building. You know, so like I know with us, we've got a couple of people who generally drive minivans to church, and our plan is, you know, get them treated as best as we can, throw them in a minivan and get them to the local hospital ourselves, because how many people have died just waiting for a squad to get there? And again, they can't come in until, because the cops don't know, you know, is there one shooter or is there 3 shooters in the building? They're not 100% sure. So they can't let the fire and EMS personnel in there to start treating this until the building's been totally secured.
That's a very good point right there. Yeah. So sometimes it may be more expeditious to treat the wound like you would in the field. In a regular combat situation, treat the wound there, get the bleeding stopped, and then get that person transported to the nearest medical facility. Now, for us, fortunately, one of the major hospitals in town is just 10 minutes away. And so that works in our favor there. But nevertheless, the point is well taken to have a comprehensive plan. Involves having trained people, and training is not limited to just shooting at targets. Training is actually doing training in the church building and walking through those scenarios. Communication's important in this too, isn't it, Cody? Talking to one another.
You're absolutely right. And if you get, you know, if you just go out and identify people when they never train together, they're not going to know how to communicate with each other in the field, you know, and you, like you referenced with the treating them in a combat situation. If there's an active shooter in your building, it is a combat situation. You know, your church just became, unfortunately, a battlefield, and we have to do what we can to end that threat, treat the people who are wounded, get them to the hospital, and to save lives. That's our goal, is to save as many lives as we can.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. So, So let's talk about, we've kind of built a good foundation here for people to understand the necessity. We've shared some statistics. We've talked about the need for training and for that to include working as a team, becoming familiar with one another that are on the team. And by the way, folks, we've got a lot of folks that are qualified and licensed to carry that are not on the team. And so we want to make that distinction there, that the folks that are on the team, everybody knows who those folks are. And if you're not on the team, they've also been instructed on what their response needs to be when those code words we use, and I'm not going to share what those code words are, but when those code words are used in the building, people know what their response is to be. And the reason that we do that, folks, is so that those that are tasked, those that are part of the active shooter response team, they're not distracted by other people moving around, other people trying to engage what's going on, but we're allowing those that have been trained to engage the situation, and everybody else needs to take a low profile. And I know that might be hard for some people to do, but it's for their own safety, isn't it, Cody?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there is such a thing, in my opinion, as too many guns in one room. And that's why we've identified so many people in our church that are armed, you know, because if you get, I would venture to guess, considering I'm given a concealed carry, free concealed carry class for our congregation here coming up, that we've got 10 to 15 individuals in our congregation that have a license to carry. So if somebody would come in and all 10 of us have our firearms out, it's going to be chaos. Cause just like you talked about a little bit earlier in the show, you know, the domestic violence where the guy showed up outside a church and killed his wife and his son. It could be a member of your congregation that's doing the shooting. You know, so you just never know. So if the shooting starts in the nursery, and I don't know who I don't know anything other than I heard a gunshot and I heard you say the words that we had agreed upon. So that kicks in our active shooter response team. We go through to clear this building. Well, if there's somebody who carries their gun on a Sunday who's down using the bathroom and I come across him, how do I know if that's the guy who's killing members of my congregation or if it's someone with a concealed carry permit just trying to stop it just like I am? So you could have a potential if you have individuals in your church carrying a gun that are not on that active shooter response team. Those team members are not going to be able to know if that's a good guy or a bad guy. And then what do you do?
Yes. Yeah. Very, very good point. Very good point. You mentioned earlier about, generally speaking, broad brushstroke definition here. Most churches, and I think this is a fair statement, Cody, most churches are what are considered to be soft targets. They're soft targets. They're not hard targets. So let's get into this now. What do we mean by soft target, and what do we mean by hard target?
So when you get into talking about a soft target, and you get into somebody who's going to plan to do the shooting, like you saw in the Charlottesville church shooting, you know, he knew what he wanted to do, and he looked for a specific church to target. They're going to do recon on your church, and soft targets, the number one thing that an active shooter looks at, and I challenge you, just like you always challenge us to do our own research, to do your own research on it and look how many active shooters happen in a gun-free zone. Everybody likes to put those little signs up in their door that say no firearms allowed. Well, all that does is it tells somebody who would be a shooter, hey, there's nobody else in that church that's carrying a gun or in that building that's carrying a gun that could stop me, because these active shooters, they want a high body count. That's all they want. They want to kill as many people as they can so that way they get their 2 days on Fox News and they're happy about that. They're psychopaths. So we need to harden our targets so that way if somebody comes and does recon on your church, they know, hey, maybe I'm not going to go to that church. I'm going to go to, you know, and I hate to say it like that. We're not trying to push someone off to the church down the street. You know, but I'm not going to go to that specific building and do that because I can see that they have a plan in place. You know, to harden your target, some examples could be, you know, when your church service starts, are you locking all your doors and hanging signs up that says, hey, there's one door unlocked. It's a main door of the sanctuary. You know, if you're coming after hours, go there. And when they open that door, are they met by an usher or somebody who's preferably armed, asking them, you know, hey, can I help you? We're not confronting these people in an aggressive manner. You know, it's just they're seeing someone. So if you kind of put yourself in somebody's shoes who's doing research, if I come to a church and all the doors are locked and the first thing I see when I open a door is someone asking for, you know, hey, can I help you? What can I do for you? Are they going to go to that place? And is that going to be top on their list, or is that going to kind of knock it down to the lower on the places of target of opportunity or that soft target? You know, our local school was right plastered on the front door, the only door that you can get into, you know, and you can look at schools as an example. Look at what the schools are doing to harden themselves through the school day to try to use that. And you can mirror that as a church. You know, there's no such thing as, you know, it's not a copycat idea if it's going to save lives. You know, like our local schools, I noticed the other day when I was taking my daughter to school, she was late, so I had to go sign her in. Well, there's only one door that you can go into, and you have to ring a doorbell to get in. Right when you ring that doorbell, right next to the doorbell is a sign that says, we have an armed school resource officer on this premises. You know, so if I'm an active shooter going in there, what's that tell me? Right away, boom, there's someone in that building with a gun. I'm not going to be able to get that high body count that I want with a gun. I'm only going to be able, you know, I may be only able to take out one or two people before I'm shot back at. You know, and you can go through and do your own research into active shooters, and it's really hard to find some of these places because it's such a low body count. It doesn't necessarily even make it up into the category of an active shooter. When you look at like the stats that they put out for active shootings, I believe most of them use an instance where more than one person died because of the use of a firearm. Well, if the only person who dies is the would-be active shooter, it's not going to make the news because 10 or 15 people didn't die, so it doesn't sell. So that's all stuff to think about. You harden your churches by having that active shooter response team. You know, don't advertise what your plan is. That's the worst thing to do. You know, you don't want to, if someone's doing recon in your church, and they come up and they ask a member of your congregation, hey, you know, I'm looking at a new church in this area. What do you guys do if there would be ever an active shooter? The answer should be, we have an active shooter response team here, and we just don't talk about the plan. Because that tells them, look, we have a plan in place, but we're not giving out, you know, we're not telling you exactly what we would do. You know, our own members of our congregation, they know that we've got a plan in place. They know who's on the team. And that's as far as it goes. They don't know what we rehearsed. And it's not because we don't trust them. It's just because they don't need to know. They need to know if something happens to hit the deck and get out when you can and hide. And that's what they need to know and to get out of our way and let us handle it.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly right. You mentioned that a lot of places and even churches, it's a head scratcher to me. But a lot of churches will post signs now, you know, no guns, gun-free zone or whatever. And we've talked about this, and I know we got a good laugh out of it when we first started talking about it. But we're serious in this, folks. I think it's a good idea for churches to post signs by their doors that says we have armed plainclothes security in place, or some type of sign that tells a would-be shooter, you're not waltzing in here and shooting the place up, shooting people. We are prepared for people like you, and we will stop you. Now, I don't think that that's really exacerbating the situation at all, and I think it will give pause to any potential active shooters and will likely, much more likely, turn them away. What do you think, Cody?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. You know, you're always going to have the, well, yeah, but hey, Cody, you said this, and then I did research and I found three of the 1,000 instances where that sign didn't work. It's not always going to work, but if you put yourself in the mind of a criminal, and that's what I teach people in my class on tactical thinking, you know, I'm going to think like a would-be killer, and I'm going to walk up to my church, and I want to see what a would-be killer would see. And if the first thing I see through that one open door is that there's a sign there that says, you know, hey, there's plainclothes armed church security team on the premises, that's going to tell me, look, I can't just walk in here and kill as many people as I want, because I'm going to get shot back at. And they do not want that. They want the easy, they want the soft targets. And all those no gun signs do is it keeps lawful, law-abiding citizens from being able to have a gun on your premises. And it also tells anybody, any would-be criminal, anyone else, hey, look, there's no guns on here. You know, I would hate to imagine how many churches, you know, like you talked about the robberies. Well, of course, everybody knows most people tithe in cash. And if you've got a sign on that door saying no guns allowed, and I want, you know, some drugs, or I want some quick money, I can go rob that church, because most churches can't afford to put a $10,000, you know, closed circuit camera system up. So they know that they can get in and get out and get on their way, and they're probably never going to get caught.
Yep. Yep. You're absolutely right. Well, let's transition into concealed carry training, acquiring a concealed carry permit. Now, I know that the laws and what you have to do and all of that varies from state to state, but you are a concealed carry trainer, certified trainer. And let's just walk folks through what they can expect if they pursue a concealed carry permit in their state. What kind of training, both range training, classroom training, what would all that look like, just in a generic sense, Cody?
So for the state of Ohio, to get your concealed carry permit, you have to do a few things. First, there's a background check that you have to go through. I recommend everybody to get on that and to review the disqualifiers for that, because there's a lot of stuff on there that you wouldn't think would be on that list. So that way you don't waste your time. But in the state of Ohio, you have to go through a minimum of an 8-hour classroom, or I'm sorry, 6 hours of classroom time and 2 hours of the range for 8 hours total. What you're going to run into, my class, I've completely revamped my class. It's my own class. Some people will do like an NRA firearm safety class, and that's all they do. And you go out and you have to shoot. Ohio, a lot of people are surprised to hear this. There is no qualification per se for the concealed carry class. Under the ORC, which is the Ohio Revised Code, it says that they just have to show competency in safety and safe firearms handling while they're on the range. Okay, now with my class, that's not how it works. To go through one of my classes, you're going to get, generally it's a 7-hour in the classroom time. I extend it by about an hour. The topics that I go over are, I talk about the firearm safety, which is the most important thing. I hit on that quite a bit. And then I go a little bit deeper, and I go into how to pick a firearm for self-defense, what ammunition you should carry for self-defense, the differences in the different types of ammunition, how to store your firearm. I go in depth on how to pick a fire or a good holster, concealed carry holster, a good belt, how to carry your gun. And then the last thing I talk about is kind of what we went over here, is I go into tactical thinking and how, you know, can you personally think through, so that way throughout your day, you limit yourself or you harden yourself as a would-be target, so that way you yourself don't become a victim of a crime out in the street, such as, you know, someone trying to steal your wallet or rob you, or if you're in a building, you know, how can you identify points just as you as an individual person in case there would be an active shooter event? What would you do should there be an active shooter event in a place that doesn't have a plan?
Yeah, and that's very good information, and it's a very good reminder, folks, that you should be aware of your surroundings. We live in a day and age when, quite frankly, I think you're foolish if you're just going out and whether you're at the mall or at the grocery, wherever you might find yourself, and you're not paying attention to anything, you're in your own little world. And I know that's easy for people to do. We can get caught up in our own thoughts and our own schedule and what needs to be done later in the day and the kids and work and so on and so forth. But one of the things that I've learned, the military taught me this, and I've never forgotten it. And then, of course, as a father, I've tried to instill this in my children, is to always be aware of your surroundings. Be aware of who is in your line of sight, who's peripherally. Did I see anybody behind me when I got out of my vehicle and started walking through this parking lot? Is there anybody just loitering? Pay attention to your surroundings. It's very important today, folks, that we do that no matter where we're at. And most especially as a man, and I know that you believe the same way, Cody, but as a man, as a husband, I am heightened in my awareness and in my sensitivity when Kathy is with, when my wife is with me, I am really paying attention. When I get out of the vehicle, who's parked close to me? Is there anybody sitting in their vehicle? Is there anybody just standing around watching the entrance of where I'm going? I pay attention to all that stuff. I can't stress that enough. What do you think, Cody?
No, I agree 100% with you. The key is when you get to doing it. Now, somebody listen to this. If this is the first time they're hearing it, they're gonna think that we're paranoid. We're not, because after you do it enough, it just becomes second nature. I don't want people to think that, you know, that I'm trying to get across that you're gonna be a victim or that eventually this is going to happen to you. But it's just good things to have. If for nothing else, if I get out of my car and I look over. You know, like you said, I get out of my car and I see someone next to me in inside their vehicle. Well, if I notice that, is that person having a medical issue that I need to address to help them or to possibly save their life? Or is that person showing some pre-attack indicators that I need to be aware of? Or are they trying to scout me out or recon me so that way I can look around and if they see that you see them and that you can identify them later on, they're chances are they're not going to pick you as a target.
That's right. Yeah, one of the best things you can do, Cody, and again, I this is something that I learned over the years, is if you're in that situation, you make eye contact with that person. You look right at them so they know you have seen them. You can ID them. They're not invisible, and that'll go a long way toward deterring any potential issues.
Yep, I agree 100% with that. You know, and I'm sure you could tell by now by hearing me talk, I carry a gun everywhere I go. Everywhere that I can legally carry a gun, I carry a gun everywhere I go because you never know when you're going to need it. You know, I have so many people that go through my concealed carry class and they're getting, well, I'm just getting it because, you know, if I go down to Dayton or if I go to Cincinnati or wherever, I want to have the capability to carry. Well, that's fine, but then you're kind of rolling the dice every time you leave your house. You know, I can tell you for a fact that a lot of these small towns, especially in our area and everywhere across the nation, they're not going to advertise every time something big happens because they're trying to get people to move in. And if they would put out on the front page of the paper that, you know, such and such store was robbed or we responded to a call of a male that potentially was walking down the street with a gun or a male that was walking down the street with a knife. And if they advertised all that, nobody would want to move to that city, you know, and you don't want that. And the other thing to think about is, you know, if you could have, say you have a city of 10,000 people, you're going to have two cops working on your average week or on your average day of the week. You know, if you're lucky, you have four cops working. How long is that cop going to take to get there? You know, our own personal safety is just that. It's our own responsibility for our safety. And a lot of people believe that the police are there as a deterrent, and we're a good deterrent. We do a good job, you know, but that one time that we don't do a good job or that we're not right around the corner, that's when you're going to wish you had it. You know, I mean, after you, and I know it's cumbersome and it gets annoying and it's kind of weird, but you know, it's like I was talking to Adam in church just the other day, you know, it's to the point now where I feel weird if I leave the house and I don't have my pistol on me. You know, to where when I first got my concealed carry permit, I felt like everybody was watching me in public. You get used to it, And it's, you know, it's the only time in your life adding a pound and a half is healthy for you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point in getting a concealed carry weapon permit is that you recognize the times in which we live, and you're going to take the necessary precautions to make sure that you are protected as much as possible, as well as your loved ones that might happen to be with you. So I echo what you said, Cody. I carry mine every place that I go, that I'm legally permitted to do that. And that includes, and I've said this before, so it's not really revealing anything. If somebody's stalking me, then this is probably the 12th or 24th time they've heard this, but I'm carrying in the pulpit. I am carrying in the pulpit, and part of the reason for that is that I will be one of the first ones to see anybody come into the sanctuary. One of the first, not the first, because part of our active shooter response team is that they'll be the first one to see and engage, but I'll be one of the first ones. And so I can give a warning very early on. And so there might be some pastors or maybe some elders or ministry leaders listening to our conversation, Cody, and they're thinking, wow, I've never considered carrying while I was at church or while I was in the pulpit teaching. Listen, pastors get shot all the time in these situations, don't they?
They do. They do. I mean, a madman goes into your church. They don't care who you are. They want to kill people. And if you're a pastor, it doesn't make them any difference.
That's right. Yeah, that's absolutely right. So, Cody, do you want to give any contact information for you for concealed carry training classes? Would you rather I put that in the show notes, or how do you want to handle that?
Sure. If you go on Facebook, you can find me on Facebook. It's Just In Case Shooting Academy, and you can contact me through Facebook. And I would even put this out to any of the churches in the Auglaize, Mercer, Allen County surrounding areas. If you want me to come in and to help you establish an active shooter response team, I would do that free of charge for you. That's how much I feel for this. I'm not going to charge a church who wants to have an active shooter response team, at least to get the initial layout done and to help you guys get off your feet. You know, I know budgetary reasons drive a lot, and that's fine. If you need it, you contact me through Facebook, or they can get a hold of me through you, and you can put my email in the notes. Just shoot me an email, and we will set something up, and I will come and do whatever I can for your church to help you build a team, because something is better than nothing.
That's right. Wow, that's, folks, I don't know how you can refuse that offer. Cody's willing to come and provide that training for the church staff or the church fellowship. Just In Case Shooting Academy on Facebook, you can find him there. Reach out to him there. Or if you'd like, you can send me an email, pastormike@ccloohio.org, and just state that you're interested in having Cody come and speak or train or work with your church leadership, whatever the case might be, to harden your church, to make it less vulnerable to an active shooter situation. So, Cody, I appreciate you joining me today for this episode. It's been very good information. I hope that it has been encouraging to people, and that they'll take advantage of your kindness and your willingness to help churches to get up to speed on an unfortunate necessity in our day. I wish it weren't this way, but the reality of life today in America is that this is very necessary. So any parting words, Cody, you might have for us before we sign off?
No, I just want to reiterate to everybody that, you know, to have the mentality that this will never happen here is a dangerous mentality to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure is, because I'm sure that everybody that was involved in one thought the very same thing. It could never happen here, and yet it did. So let's do all we can to make sure it doesn't happen where you are, folks. Thanks for joining me and my friend and brother Cody for this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. Again, Just in case Shooting Academy on Facebook, reach out to Cody. He'll be happy to get you trained. God bless you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio Program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, pastormike@woh.rr.com. God bless you today as you seek him.